The most expensive ferment I ever ruined was a 5-kilogram batch of Nukazuke in my second year of apprenticeship. The rice bran was correct, the salt was correct, the vegetables were the right vegetables for the season. And after 3 weeks, the whole crock had developed a white film on top and a faintly chemical smell underneath. The senior cook lifted the lid, took one sniff, and asked me which container I had used. It was a glazed ceramic crock I had bought at a discount homeware shop. The glaze had a hairline crack along one inside seam. That crack, invisible to me, had been harboring an off-microbe colony for the entire fermentation. The ferment was finished before I started. I have thought carefully about jars ever since. The vessel is not an afterthought. It is part of the system, on equal footing with the salt percentage and the temperature, because it determines three things the ferment cannot survive without: what touches the brine, what enters from above, and what leaves as the bacteria produce gas. Get any of the three wrong, and the ferment fails, regardless of how perfectly you weighed the salt. The material question comes first. Glass is the safest default: non-reactive, transparent, easy to sterilize, and chemically inert against the lactic and acetic acids that ferments produce. Pyrex and soda lime glass jars from any reputable manufacturer have no failure modes at fermentation temperatures and acidities. Ceramic is the traditional choice in Japan, China, and Korea, with crocks like the Ongi, Korean breathing earthenware, actively chosen because their slight porosity permits microscopic gas exchange while remaining waterproof. The risk with ceramic is glaze. A cracked or low-fired glaze can leach lead or harbor foreign microbes. And modern food-safe ceramic must be labeled as such. Avoid decorative imported pottery without explicit food-safe certification. Food-grade plastic, high-density polyethylene, HDPE, and polypropylene, PP, labeled with recycling codes 2 or 5, is acceptable for ferments and used industrially worldwide. But plastic absorbs odors permanently. A plastic bucket that fermented kimchi will smell like kimchi forever, even after thorough washing. Metal is universally a bad idea for active fermentation. Stainless steel is borderline acceptable for short ferments, but reactive enough over weeks to discolor the brine. And aluminum or copper are out of the question. The shape decision matters as much as the material. A wide mouth jar is essential for any ferment that needs packing: sauerkraut, kimchi, whole vegetable pickles. Because the cook needs to press the contents down under the brine with hands or a weight, and a narrow neck makes this physically impossible. Is the right shape for liquid ferments, where you want to minimize the air-to-brine surface area. Vinegar mothers, kombucha second ferments, fish sauces. Less surface area means less oxygen exposure, which means less risk of calm yeast, the harmless but ugly white film, and aerobic mold colonization. Then comes the question that determines whether your jar survives the ferment: gas management. A vigorous lactic ferment produces measurable carbon dioxide. A kilogram of fermenting cabbage at room temperature can generate several liters of CO2 over its first week. And that gas has to go somewhere. A jar sealed tight, like a screw-top mason with the lid fully tightened, will pressurize and either pop the lid violently, or in rarer cases, crack the glass. I have seen a mason jar of fermenting kimchi on a friend's countertop send a column of brine 3 feet into the air at 3 a.m, when the pressure finally exceeded the lid seal. The kitchen was a crime scene. The three reasonable solutions, in increasing order of elegance, are open with weight, airlock, and gasketed lid. Open with weight is the oldest method: a wide crock, a clean stone or weighted plate pressing the food below the brine, and a cloth over the top to keep dust out. Gas escapes freely, air enters freely. It works but requires daily skimming of any surface film. An airlock, the kind used in beer brewing, fitted into a drilled lid or a silicone gasket, allows CO2 to bubble out through water while preventing air from coming back in. This is the modern home fermenter standard, and it works reliably for any vegetable ferment. The most elegant solution is the gasketed lid jar, of which the two definitive examples are the German Weck system. The Weck 743 1-liter tulip is the canonical fermentation jar, and the Japanese Cellarmate, Serameto, made by Hoshishou Seisho, available in sizes from 500 milliliters to 4 liters. Both designs use a rubber gasket that seals against a glass lip, with the lid held in place by clips or wire. Internal pressure lifts the gasket just enough to release CO2. Then the gasket reseals against the glass as the pressure equalizes. Oxygen cannot enter, carbon dioxide can leave. The jar self-vents, completely passively, with no airlock, no daily monitoring, no risk of explosion. For a beginner, this is the most forgiving setup possible. The CellarMate is the jar I use for almost everything short to medium term: pickled plums, quick miso, vegetable kraut, fermented hot sauces. Headspace, the empty volume between the top of the contents and the bottom of the lid, is the final consideration. Active vegetable ferments expand. A kilogram of cabbage will rise as it gives off liquid and gas. And packing a jar completely full guarantees that brine will spill out over the rim during the first 3 days. Leave 1 to 2 centimeters of headspace, set the jar on a small plate to catch any overflow, and check at 48 hours. After the initial activity calms down, the level stabilizes, and you can usually forget the jar for a week. To summarize, glass or food-safe ceramic, wide mouth for solid ferments, and narrow for liquid, gasketed lid for safety, 1 to 2 centimeters headspace, never a screw-tight seal on an active ferment. The Weck and the CellarMate are not mysterious heirlooms. They are physics solved correctly. Use them, and most of the things that can go wrong in fermentation cannot. But it decides whether the recipe gets to finish.